everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Onigiri & Co. podcast. Today we have a French team because I'm welcoming French pilot Benoît Fink. Hello.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. Yeah, it's Easter today, so I'm just chilling.
Just enjoying
the weekend.
yes, a proper daylight in your background, as I can see. You can't see, but I'm in the dark already. I'm in the future.
Yeah, what time is it right now for you?
It's 8 p.m.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, plus it's complete opposite in the seasons as well, because you are going slowly into autumn and we are just starting spring. So yeah, it's the opposite.
It is completely the opposite. And you know, I was so disorganized. My drone was not finished. I was upgrading it for summer. And I just finished it today. And today is the first day in like a month that it's raining. And I'm like, well done, Noelie. You finish your drone and now it's going to be winter. But anyway, so obviously we've been aware of each other. We've met each other since something like 2017, 18. I don't know if the audience of the episode knows you. Some people might not know you. So if you want, you can introduce yourself and tell us who you are.
So I'm Benoît Fink. It's pronounced Benoît Fink in French. I am an FPV pilot. I started in 2017, which I believe is the same year you started. Yeah. And we kind of started at the same time, even on YouTube and everything. So it was funny. So I used to do YouTube. Now I mostly fly professionally. I have a company called House of FPV, and we fly all over the world for clients, mostly commercials and a little bit of movies as well, and also music videos. That's what I do now.
Awesome. It's quite an evolution when you think about it. From 2017 to now, it's only 7 years. When you think about it, when you start FPV, how complicated at the time as well it was to build something and fly something, and now you have a company. I wonder, were you thinking already that way when you started flying FPV? Was that something you had in mind, or you had no idea it would happen?
Absolutely not. I actually, like, a lot of people were telling me, oh yeah, it's going to become your job, right? And I was like, nah. Like, what I do is for fun. And a lot of people were like, oh yeah, this is absolutely going to be your job. Because I used to work at an advertising agency. Mm-hmm. And I was flying in the office a tiny whoop like all the time, because that was like my time to get practice at lunch, on lunch break and stuff like that. Plus, it was like a cool space to fly. So I really enjoyed flying there. And I remember my colleagues seeing the potential before I did, kind of, where I was like, no, this is just a like toy. And they were like, no, but you can film with it, right? I was like, yeah, but it doesn't match what people were expecting. And slowly, this gap was like met. Like, I mean, it kind of got smaller and smaller as like we got better quality with the GoPros and everything kind of just like met at some point with like stabilization as well, real steady. It all kind of just like cross paths at some point, and that's exactly at the moment where I became professional. It kind of out of the blue, because even like 6 months before I became professional, I didn't know I was going to be a professional. People were telling me like, oh yeah, this is happening now, because I left a job to go to another one, and when I announced people that I was leaving that job, they were like, oh yeah, you're going to do drones, right? And I was like, no, I'm just going to a different agency and becoming a creative director. And then they're like, what, like, it doesn't make sense, like, you should just do drones. And then fortunately I got fired from the position quite quickly, because they just pivoted. The company was like a creative kind of media, and they wanted to have an agency, and they give it a go for like 2 months, and then they were like, oh, actually we don't want to do an agency anymore. The money is not coming fast enough. And then they let me go, and then I was waiting. I had a job guaranteed at a different agency, but it needed some time because they had someone and they were waiting for that person to end their contract. And so it was like 5 months of just chilling. And that's when I started doing shoots kind of out of the blue, because I met a guy at my previous job that was doing shoots with drones. And I started just flying regular drones and a little bit of FPV. I was like introducing it. And then it just happened. And I just like became full time. At some point where I had to make a decision, and I made the decision to go with this. And yeah, that's how it happened. And I was the first like professional FPV pilot in Europe, like full-time professional FPV pilot.
Wow. So people who called it were like, the prophecy has happened.
Yeah, exactly. They're like, the first person to call it was my father-in-law, actually. When we had the discussion, because he's Indian, and we had to have a discussion for me to get married to his daughter, and and when we had that discussion, he said like, oh yeah, but drones are going to be your job in the future, right? And I was like, no, and because that was 2000, I guess that was 2017 that he said that. And and I had just started, like I had like 6 months of FPV under my belt, and I was like, no, this is not gonna be my job. But yeah.
Yeah, that's funny. You know, it's interesting. You said you started with advertising. I think I somehow knew it, because my current company that I work with, we're really interested into marketing at the moment, because, you know, for all companies, you need to have certain knowledge of marketing and mm-hmm. promotion and advertisement. And there was a time where we were trying to think of how to make a sort of, you know, reel with all the things we can do. And because we do FPV at work, one of my colleagues said, oh, look, I have to show you this video as a reference. It's like, I think it happens in Paris, and there's horses and there's FPV, and it's for like a famous brand. And I was like, I think that's something that Benoit filmed with FPV, because I had seen it on your Instagram. So I said nothing while we were watching the video, and I said, what do you think? And I said, well, I think it's great. And also, I know the person who did that. So it's interesting, because the person who showed us that, he's quite well versed in advertisement as well. So he could tell that what works well. And then the fact that he showed us a reference that you worked on, I'm like, it all adds up. It makes sense. That was last year, end of last year. So do you want to talk a little bit about, maybe we will talk about your professional life as a drone pilot, but maybe do you want to talk a bit about your early years, like what made you want to start, and did you ever do FPV racing, or were you always doing freestyle, and how did you find your style of flying, you know, this stuff?
Mm-hmm. Cool. Yeah. So what should we start by? I mean, mostly when we started, it was a lot more, there was a lot less information out there. Like there was, it started to be kind of readily accessible through YouTube, but you still had to like kind of search, and everything was in English. I mean, that's not a problem for me, but like it was a little bit less developed in that sense. So you still quite needed people to, and there was also a lot of things that unless you knew you would just like miss it, and then you would probably burn a quad, or like something would happen that would be kind of bad. So yeah, you needed people back then, and I met a really cool group of people that were in Paris, and they kind of took me under their wing, and they just started introducing me to everything, showing me the ropes, and especially Petit Soldat. He kind of showed me, he was a pilot back then that was like pretty like developed and sponsored and everything, and he kind of like took me under his wing, and we started training in the morning super early, like 6 a.m. every day. We would go and do it as if we were like on a mission to like get better. Mm-hmm. And it was just, it was just because it was the only time we could go where there would be no people in the park. And also, it was before work. So then that way we were able to just go fly quickly and then go to work. And so, yeah, we did that a bunch. And then we started having a little group, a little crew. And back then, no one was really flying bandos as well. And this is kind of a thing that we introduced. I started looking for bandos throughout the area. I mean, throughout, yeah, the Paris area. I started really getting into Google search, Street View, so like, and everything, so that like you can find like abandoned spots, you can find news articles, you can find, you can look through like a lot of things. I actually did a video about that, like how I found my spots. And I did that a lot, and we found some really cool bandos that were like classic bandos that a lot of people went to afterwards. I did a little bit of racing as well, because my friends were into that, and I kind of wanted to fly, to test that as well. But I didn't get into it at all, actually. I did like two races, I think. One of them being the DCL race, and then the other race that I did was, like one event somewhere. And I just didn't like it. I didn't like being confined to a track. I didn't like the fact that it was just 1 minute of like no breathing, and then like boom, it's done. Like you do three laps super fast, and then that's it. It was because FPV to me was all about freedom and exploring and like going at your own pace and like in style as well. I always liked the fact that you can really stylize your flight and go like through gaps and stuff, and that's something that you can't really do with racing is all about efficiency. So that was just not my thing, I think. So I did like a little bit, but not that much.
Fair enough. That's a good point you make. I'm trying to get more racing people and pilots on the podcast, but because people have asked for it. It's hard because they have a schedule of competitions, especially if they're international pilots. And also some of them are professionals like you, because you know that's what works, you know, financially speaking as well. And so to be able to get them on the podcast, so I seem to always be able to get freestyle people because they're my friends. I already know them. I know what we're talking about, because I'm like, geez, if I get racing pilots, what am I going to talk about? Because I don't know what questions to ask. But you know, that's where I will rely on Lexi, on my own high, to come on the podcast and ask them the question. So freestyle has always been your big main interest. Who were the pilots that were really an influence in your FPV life at the beginning?
Well, I mean, Petit Soldat, as I said, was like a huge influence. Then J True FPV, who still is, like now we work together. I made sure that there was a place for him in my company, so now we actually work together. He was a huge influence. The guys at Pirate Frames as well, that was my first sponsor, these guys were there for me. We started going flying together. We kind of tried and push the limits of what we could do even further. And it's during the Pirate Frames trip number one, I think. Yeah, number one, that I did like one of my biggest lines that got like super famous afterwards with the tunnel, and then I dived down into like a building and stuff. And that got like 10 million views. And that's kind of what made me like, that kind of propelled my career. So yeah, these guys are definitely like had a huge influence. Another person that had a huge influence was Trappy. Because I met with him in Dubai. We went to Dubai twice together for the like when every year they were doing this filming of buggies, of dune buggies, like, and they were like super powered, like 1600 horsepower buggies, I think, that can do wheelies and stuff. And every year they would go and do a little filming session for these guys, and this happened all the way until COVID. and I was on in the two last sessions. So that was pretty cool. I mean, that was super cool to meet him, to see like his experience in the drone business. Like I always said, like, I mean, when I came back, I remember like after the first time coming back and saying like, wow, I've gained like 3 years of experience in a week, just being with him and talking about, I mean, talking about FPV business, like how it works and everything. It's so crazy, the experience that he has and the vision. Yeah, he's definitely super influential. And then, obviously, Mr. Steele, mm-hmm. just by his videos, by his friendship, by, I mean, yeah, everything. His also, like, the way he inspired everyone, I think, to fly. And also, yeah, Umagod, obviously.
Yeah,
And even Rotor Riot in general, the OG Rotor Riot. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's like, I'd say like these are like a huge influence on everything for me in the early days for sure.
It is so amazing that when I talk to pilots that started, you just said earlier, you started at the same time as me, and lots of guests on the podcast started around at least 2015, you know, and most of the time at the same time as us. It's crazy to think that me in Australian desert and you in Paris, we were all tuning in to watch these four guys or five guys, you know, of Roto Riot, and they influenced so many things that we've done afterwards, like putting GoPros and wanting to share things and you know, doing tricks videos, and we're like, I have to practice this trick next time I go up, you know. It's and it created this whole community around the world. I think it's sometimes I forget, and then when I talk with someone like you on the podcast, I'm like, oh, I found this quite beautiful. I love the FPV community.
Yeah.
So my next question, when you were talking, it gave me some ideas. I have a tendency to be a bit scattered, but I was thinking, before we talk about how you had to upgrade, I suppose, your equipment to become a pro and what it takes to become pro pilot, what were you flying most of the time as an equipment when you were just still a hobbyist?
Oh, just like I had like 3 5-inch quads, I think. Mm-hmm. I started with one, obviously, and then like moved on like to 2 and then 3. But yeah, it was 3 5-inch quads that I would bring everywhere. 3 because if you have 3, you can break one, and then you still have 2 chances of like doing things. If you have 2, you break one, and then that drone is the last one that you have, and you don't want to risk everything. So yeah, I like to have 3 for that reason. Also, that way it gives you, yeah, it just gives you an extra chance. And then if you have multiple days of flying and you break something that requires you to buy parts, then you still have a quad to fly. So yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yes.
And also tiny whoops. Yeah.
Oh yeah, tiny whoops.
I always loved flying tiny whoops. And even now, like, I have a Mobula 8. And I fly it in my office because I just love this thing. Like, it's like, for me, that's one of the things that got me into flying FPV is being very tiny and like, and using a tiny whoop, because it felt so magical to me to be transported in this like tiny universe where I could be like very small and go through things and have that perspective that I couldn't have any other way. So yeah.
That's how you started FPV, with having a tiny whoop. That was your first FPV drone?
Yeah, that was the first one. I saw someone flying in South Africa for fun. It was on a shoot, but the guy was flying for fun in between takes. He was flying FPV. Mm-hmm. He was actually flying using like a monitor and like half line of sight, half FPV, which was super weird. But yeah, he gave me a few advices and I bought a tiny whoop when I got home, and for 2 months I just grinded on that, and then it took like a month for my 5-inch to show up. Like, after a month I ordered, but then like it took a month for the 5-inch to arrive because it was coming from China. And so I had like 2 months of like going every day hard on the, I only had one battery, I think. Oh, wow. And I was just like plugging in and out like the whole time. And then I bought my goggles in the meantime, and I just like started flying like that. And then I ended up, after 2 or 3 months of tiny whoops, I've ended up getting the first 5-inch. So I kind of, it was like, it was a little bit like the pilots that start on simulator now, mm-hmm. and they go to real life afterwards. I already knew how to fly. Like the first time I flew was in an underground parking lot. The first time I flew my 5-inch, because it was raining that day and I really wanted to fly. So like these guys were like, oh, you want to fly? Okay, like just come and we'll fly in this parking lot. And I started flying in this underground parking lot with like 3 meters of like height. And and the guys were like, what the fuck? Like, how do you know how to fly already? It's your first time. And there, and I was like, yeah, because I flew tiny whoops for a while. So yeah.
That's amazing. Yeah. And I agree. I wish I could fly tiny whoops a bit more, and they make me a bit sick for some reason. I don't know if it's the
it's the yaw. It's the fact that you move with a yaw and that you have a lot of like blur all the time, I think. And it's so smooth as well. So yeah, I get what you mean though, yeah.
Okay, so I can't. Mm. I fly two batteries, and then I'm like, I need to rest my eyes, like an old person, you know. But it does.
No, yeah, it's motion sickness. Yeah.
Motion sickness, and during the pandemic, at some stage, I was always alone because my partner here was able to work through lockdowns and things like that, but I wasn't able to. So I got the little drone out and I was flying and I was orbiting like stuff in my house. And it's funny how indeed suddenly you feel shrunk. You feel like you're a tiny person, which you don't get with the other drones. The other drones, you feel like that's what you would see if your body was flying outside. But the tiny, drone is a mini persona. Do you remember what was the big difference for you when you went that day or a bit later from flying the small drone to the 5-inch? What was the big challenge?
I mean, it was the power for sure, like how powerful it was. And I remember the first thing that struck me really was like how much you break stuff. Like that first time I broke like propellers and I broke an antenna as well. And I was like, damn, like we break so many things. Like, and it was small things when you think about it. It was like really like props and antennas. It's like, what? Like, that's a great session if you just break that. Yeah. But yeah, it was like, wow, you break so many things. And yeah, that's the first thing that struck me, I guess.
I like asking these kind of things because everybody has different answers of what they remember from their first time. So, you know.
Yeah.
So, well, now we can talk a little bit about your professional life since then. Like, how did you make the switch from when you were like, okay, now I'm going to make that my job? What was the process behind it?
So, yeah, as I said, had been working, like it kind of happened gradually. So I started working because I was waiting for another job to come up. So I started flying just like that, and I did a few. And then when these guys came back to me, the guys that had guaranteed me a job, I had 3 weeks of shoot lined up. So what happened was that I told them, okay, I'll do freelance for you in between the time that I'm shooting. And then they were happy with that. So I kept going on and off from shooting to the office. And I started preferring, and I started realizing that the job that they were offering me was exactly the job that I was doing 2 years before. So I was like, it's going to be the same thing again. And at the same time, I was going on all these exciting shoots and I was like, I think. And at the last one was like a full week long shoot. And I was having so much fun at that shoot that on the third day or something. So 3 days before enrolling at that company full time, I started having a conversation with my wife saying like, I really want to do this. I think I should try and just do this thing for a long time. I mean, full time. And she was like, okay, let's try it. And the day before, like when, so no, yeah, that was 2 days before. And then the next day, my decision was made. And I called them. So the day before I enrolled full time, and I said, I'm not coming tomorrow. And I just said, like, sorry, I'm not going to be coming again. And I'm not going to come in tomorrow for my first day as a full time employee at your company, because I'm going to do this full time, drone flying. Mm. And 3 days later, one of my videos got viral. And did 10 million views. And I felt like that was the universe telling me, like, yeah, go ahead. This is what you should do. And it was a big risk at the time, because me and my wife were living in a very, very tiny apartment, a 25 square meter apartment, mm-hmm. Which is I think it is 250 square feet for people talking in feet. Yeah. So it's just one bedroom, basically. Today, my living room is bigger than my previous apartment. So yeah, that's a realization that I had recently. I was like, damn. And we watched an old, like, tiny Whoop video that I had from my old apartment, and we were like, wow, we were living, both of us, in this thing. And yeah, like, to get like a new place in Paris, you need to have like a lot of guarantees, including a stable job.
And yeah,
this was the opposite of a stable job at the time. So we ended up just trying to find a place regardless, and we got one. And we, like, fortunately we met an owner that was our age, and he kind of understood where we were coming from, because both of us work in like internet jobs. So, and they kind of understood, and we were like, okay, cool. And we got the place, and yeah, that's how, I mean, that, and it, so yeah, it was a lot of risk all the way, but in the end, everything paid off. It wasn't without a lot of stress.
Yeah.
Even today, it's still very stressful, but yeah, and eventually it worked out.
That's awesome. So when you started doing your first shoots, it was with your fleet that you had for yourself at the beginning.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Exactly. At first I just started flying. It's so crazy, because I started, now things are so different from when I started doing it professionally. Like, back then, people couldn't see my footage. People couldn't see my video while flying, which is like, it's kind of crazy today to think about. Like, people are like, they expect to see your video. And back then, I was like, no, you have to trust me. I'm flying, and then I can show you the footage on the GoPro if you want, but it's not going to be exactly the same. Or I can show it to you on your computer, on my computer, once I've stabilized everything. But you have to trust me. So I was just flying, and then they were looking at me fly, and they were like, okay, good. So yeah, that's like a big, big difference from how it is now. So yeah, like, I started doing this, and just like this, and then I started building drones that were dedicated to the job, because I was flying bendos at the same time, and I didn't want to be stressing about breaking my drone and then not being able to fly on the job the next day. So I started having like 2-3 drones that were dedicated to just flying, and then, I mean, just flying for work, and then I had my bendo drones that would be flying on the fun days. So yeah.
Yeah, and they were the same, like, you were just copying your normal fleet, or were you
Literally.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, because I was used to that drone, so I was like, let's just keep it exactly the same. And yeah, it's not until I was forced to change the drone, because we had, I mean, first of all, it started with CineWhoops, and then flying cinema cameras and everything, that I was forced to kind of be able to be well-versed in every kind of drone. And I would say that, like, since I started professionally end of 2018, almost 2019, the biggest skill that I've learned over the last 5 years was to fly a bunch of different drones and be comfortable with all of them equally. Mm. So yeah. Mm-hmm.
So what are the kind of drones now that you can fly on sets and on jobs?
So usually we offer two different options. We offer like a GoPro option, which is just a basic 5-inch CineWhoops, sometimes tiny whoops. I mean, like a 95X, for example, from Beta FPV with a naked GoPro. Mm-hmm. And then on the other side, you have the cinema option. And our fleet is very simple because we have one drone that does everything and does everything really well. We have a 10-inch 12S drone that can both carry a Red Komodo, for example, or a Sony FX6, which is our favorite camera. Mm-hmm. And then either so in fixed setup or with a gimbal. Everything is on quick release, so it goes super fast between like fixed FPV and gimbal. We can go really fast. We can change batteries super fast as well. So yeah, we have this one thing, and then we have a ducted version as well, which is like a 5-inch. That's an X8 5-inch. Mm-hmm. That we call the Calzone. It's a QAV Pro Whoop X8. So we modified it so that it works as an X8, and that's it.
Wow. Okay. And that covers all the things you're being asked to do.
Yeah, mostly. And then we have a bigger 14-inch drone that we just built, and we haven't used it on set yet. But yeah, this one can fly something like a Movi. So it's like a huge, huge gimbal. I mean, it's not even that big, but it's like it's a bigger gimbal, and we can also fly like an Arri cinema camera, no problem, with a big lens. Like we can fly a camera that's 5 kilos with no problem.
That's awesome.
With the gimbal, so that's like a 7 kg payload, and we're good. So yeah, that's a good drone that we built. We haven't had to use it yet on set, but hopefully it will come to use very soon.
I really wonder. I always wonder what it feels like to build big drones. I have a friend here in Australia. It's his job. He didn't think it would become his job. He started like you and I flying, and now he's really good at building big drones for a company that flies like you on sets. And every time he said, because we're a friend on Discord chat, then he sends photos of what he's allowed to share, but like the motors are enormous, and I'm like, I wonder what it feels like to build one of those. Like, did it help you learn even more about the technical side of the hobby, or is it just the same but bigger?
Well, I was at the beginning as well of what we call cinelifting today. Fun fact, I actually came up with the word cinelifter. I'm the one that wrote it down. So cinelifting started from a group of people, which was me, Gab, Nurk, Andy Shen. We had Ferdinand as well. We had Raphael from Canada, who's an aerial cinematographer as well. I'm forgetting a couple of people, I think. But yeah, it started as a conversation of how do we get to fly cinema cameras. And so we did a first prototype, which was a hexacopter, so 6 arms, and it was like, but it was flat, so it was like a circle, and you would just like it was called the Hex. I think you can still find it on Shendrone's website. And so we did that for a while, and we tested that prototype. We were pretty happy with it, but still, like, there were things that could be changed. So then we did the thick, and the thick, we all tried it. We're pretty happy with it. So we were like, okay, like, this is a thing now. So what do we call it? And we brainstormed the ID, and we decided, okay, like, we'll call it cinelifting, like cinelifters. And so I made the group, the Facebook group that has, and I thought this group ultimately would have like 500 people in it, and now it's got 8,500 people in it, which is crazy. Like, we never expected that many people to be interested. And the whole idea behind the group was to kind of bring the groundwork that we had done of okay, like this is now something that's possible. We've used it for a year. Because yeah, at the time that we built the group, we had been using that kind of drone for about a year. Okay. And we were trying to find, we were doing sin lifting for about a year. Mm-hmm. And we were like, okay, like let's now, like the group isn't big enough now to come up with solutions on our own. So let's outsource the problem a little bit more. Let's include more people to that problem and see like what kind of solutions they come up with. And so and at the same time it was offering a product, so we had that product thick, and at the same time we were able to find new brains to think about that. And now it has stemmed to it has grown to what it is now, which is a lot of people thinking about how about different ways to carry a cinema camera. And it's really cool because it's so much more complex than doing a 5-inch. So if to answer your original question, no, it's not the same as just doing a 5-inch. Also, just in the development of everything, like the frame design was really important because you have so many different things that come through frame design, because there's a lot more weight to everything. So everything has to be designed in an efficient way. Vibrations are completely like different as well, because everything is bigger. So the vibrations get bigger. Everything gets bigger. So you have to make sure that these vibrations don't happen. You have to find ways to tune that better as well. You have to make sure that everything, and also since you're carrying a heavier payload, the pressure is bigger, because when we fly in, the value is between $10,000 and $15,000. So it's quite a lot of money to lose if you just lose the drone. So you have to make sure that everything, you have to have kind of ways to make sure that it doesn't crash, even if you burn a motor. Have to make, so that's why we fly X8s mostly, because one motor, even two or three motors can go and the thing will still fly back. And then we got really interested into RTH as well. It pushed a whole bunch of things. Like it made us understand how video works a lot more as well. We had to look into what DJI does, because we were getting cuts, like video cuts. So is it DJI? Is it other interference? It turns out it was other interference on set. So now we have to create like a way of working with other people where we have to tell them to turn off certain devices when we work and so on. So there's been a bunch of learnings throughout this thing, and now it amounts to, I don't remember which year the group was created. I think it was 2021 probably. Maybe 2020 actually. 2021 I think. But yeah. So after 3 or 4 years, now we're starting to have really interesting things coming up from a lot of places. It's funny because like my parts now for the bigger drone that we built, the 14-inch, some stuff come from Australia, some stuff come from the US, some from China, some from France. Like some from England. Like this is like a whole. There's a lot of people that have thought about different problems, and it all comes together, which is like really cool to think about.
It is really cool. And it's funny you say some parts come from Australia. I won't be able to say anything, I think, on the podcast, but I've talked with people I know here, and they said they were in contact with people working on cine lifters. And I wonder, well, I assume it's the same people that I'm thinking of. And I was like, So I was like, wow, this is really cool how this has become a big part of the FPV drone scene, those giant drones, you know. And I assume all this R&D that you've done is also something you enjoy doing, not just the flying then, but also the research behind it.
Yeah, I'm not the best at doing R&D when it comes to the technical aspect. I'm pretty good at the vision or like solution, like problem solving. So I'm more of a like of giving like my needs and my direction, and sometimes coming up with a creative way of solving something. But when it comes to like directly like doing the technical parts, I'm not necessarily the best at doing that. But I can design in 3D. I can do a lot of that, but mostly R&D at House of FPV is done by J.True. So yeah, because he's an engineer, he's also now the head builder, so he will build everything. Every time we have to open up a drone, he's the one opening it and solving everything, because he knows those machines by heart. Like, he built 9 of the 10-inch 12S that we have. So we have each team, we have 3 teams, and each team has 3 of these drones. So, and all of them were built by Jocelyn. So, yeah.
Wow. Yeah. I wanted to have him on the podcast, Quick Tangent, but he said, I don't speak English. And I'm like, really? Is that true? What do you think of his English? Do you think he could
get his English? Not that bad, but yeah, maybe for a podcast, it would be a bit difficult.
Yeah. We'll see. I would like to have him at least 20 minutes, you know, because it's interesting, and I like talking to French people. I need to do it more often. So, so big drones, normal drones, and then House of Flying, is it the name of, or House of Drones?
House of FPV.
Oh, House of FPV. And so this, how old is this company as it is now?
As it is now, it is 2 years old, I think. Okay, three. Because basically before that I was an independent pilot.
Yeah.
So I was just flying by myself. I mean, I was just doing this little business by myself.
Mm-hmm.
And then eventually I wanted to get an intern. Eventually I had to create a company.
Mm-hmm.
I have to check something, but I think it's older than I think it is. Yeah,
it can happen.
Yeah, it is, because yeah, it's at least 3 years and a half, actually.
Okay. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. 3 years and a half. So yeah, I did 2 years of that, and it went pretty well, and of being by myself. And then after that, I had to, for legal reasons, I had to create a company because of turnover, basically.
Yeah.
Because you have in France, you can be self-employed to a certain limit of your turnover. And once you go over that, you have to create a company.
Yeah.
So I did it for that reason first. And then I was like, okay, now that I have a company, maybe I should hire an intern or someone to help me on set as a kind of drone tech. So I started looking for that, and in the process I found Nicolas Gaillard, who was who kind of told me like, oh, I would be interested in doing this, and but I live in Marseille and it's complicated. And I was like, dude, like, I'm not you're not going to be my drone tech, you're going to be one of my pilots. So then I hired him as a pilot, but then I had 2 pilots and no drone tech. We need 1 drone tech per pilot. So, I mean, he was my drone tech first for like a month and a half. I just trained him like that. Mm-hmm. And then after that, I found another tech. And now we were 3. And I had to get an office as well. So I got an office because they were not going to come to my place to work. And also at that point, work had become such a busy thing that I didn't want to be in my house to like do the work. So I just moved out all the work things to an office that I started renting. And yeah, so now it's 3 years and a half, I guess. Yeah. And and so yeah, it grew, and now it like we're going back in size, like a little bit smaller as well, because we were too big at some point. It started costing way too much money to run, and for what we were making, and now we're downsizing a little bit, making everything more dense, and kind of stabilizing the business. But yeah,
cool. And yeah. So do you remember the first kind of jobs you got, either on your own or with that company as it is, that you were like, holy crap, I'm really excited about this?
Every time. Every time I'm excited. Like all the first jobs were super exciting. The first really big job that I got just when I started was a job with Beautiful Destinations. They're a big Instagram account that work as a travel agency. I mean, they work like as a travel marketing kind of agency. And they had a job for Puerto Rico where they wanted to have a lot of FPV in it. And so I went there to do that. And that was like, wow, someone's flying me across the Atlantic to fly FPV. And it was funny because like Johnny had turned down the job, so they called me, and I was like, oh, I'm replacing Johnny, like that's like, sick. And and we started like this, and after that I think just every job was like super sick, and I was super excited about it. And what I find really interesting as well is that through each job, you learn about a different kind of business. You learn about different people, and yeah, it's like each job is an opportunity to meet new people, learn something, be in a different environment. So yeah, that's pretty exciting.
Yeah. So just out of curiosity, what kind of industries, even if you can't tell name of companies, but like, what are the industries that are interested in services like what you do?
One sec. I'm just gonna. Je vais juste me moucher vite fait.
Little ad break. I'm gonna use this to thank you all for following this podcast episode and the podcast in general. In case you didn't know, I have Patreon. I try to talk more and more about it, but if you are interested into supporting this podcast, I have Patreon, and this helps me buy subscriptions like this program that helps me bring video on YouTube to you of, for example, this current episode. And it helps me paying for editing software that I use to edit the video and the audio. And I even have a little bit of AI software these days to like refine my audio. So if you consider supporting financially this podcast, have a look on Patreon. And if you cannot support it financially, feel free to share it with your friends and always give us the good rating if you like it. Anyway, Benoit is back.
I did a little ad break. So industries are interested in doing FPV. It can be anything really. Obviously, the automotive industry is quite interested in getting drone shots in general. Yeah. It's always been the case because they need to set the car in an environment. So that's a big one. We get a lot of fashion stuff as well because that's kind of a niche that we created here in Paris, because one of the directors that I work with was like the first one to use it. And then everyone got really interested in that. So now, like, there's a lot of FPV in fashion. It's funny because in the beginning, it was like, how do we introduce FPV to each and every niche? And, like, for example, one of them was hip-hop and music videos in general. And when you look at French rap, a lot of the music videos have FPV in it. And that stems from one job that we did 5 or 6 years ago for a rapper called Booba. He's like one of the biggest French rappers. And he did a music video that has a lot of FPV in it. And from that point, rappers started saying, "I want the same guy who flew in the in the Booba music video," and so it just grew like crazy from that first thing. So now it's like a staple in French rap that to have FPV.
Then that's cool.
We did fashion like that, and then so fashion after that first job. Everyone went crazy as well. Like I remember one fashion week we did 7 different brands. Wow. in one week. I mean, models, they do up to 30 brands in one week during fashion Wow. week, so it's not that crazy, but it is still pretty substantial. Then the automotive industry, I don't do a lot of like the extreme sports kind of niche, because a lot of people do that well, and found like these are not necessarily the best opportunities for us, because they expect you to just not get paid that well. Like, I mean, they just, because the job, since the job is cool, they just expect you to kind of do it for almost for free. And like, we have to make a living at the end of the day, so I can't really do that for like super cheap. And and also, it's just organization wise it's not necessarily the best jobs, but it's also a passion thing, so you, at the end of the day, you kind of have to choose whether or not you want to do these kind of jobs. But for me, I find it to be a bit unreliable at times. Also, there's a lot of people trying to get that niche, so let's work something else. I always kind of like to bring FPV to unexpected places. So when I have the opportunity to do like a food thing, or like back then I even looked into like porn and trying to do it in porn. It didn't happen. I didn't find like the right people to do porn with FPV, but I kind of thought about it at some point. I looked into the whole spectrum of like, where are we not expected? Like, what has not been done yet?
Yeah.
And like, what can we do about it? But
yeah, that's so funny. But yeah, I'm glad I asked the question, because a lot of answers I didn't expect. I feel like the fashion side makes sense, because a lot of advertisement in fashion is a bit like, you know, ethereal and floating. You know, so that works. That's such a, you know, it makes sense once you realize there's a connection between the two. Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny, because like, I have a director that hated drone before working with us, but really, like, he was like, we met, and because it was on a Louis Vuitton shoot, and he Louis Vuitton asked for us to be there. It didn't come from him, it came from Louis Vuitton. So which is very rare, by the way, that a brand asked for us directly. So we came there, and the director like shook my hand, and he was like, "Oh, I hate drones, so I don't think we're gonna work a lot together, but whatever." And we started flying, and he looked at it, and he was like, "Wait, like, this is actually pretty cool, and this is very different from any kind of drone that I've seen before." And he liked the floatiness of it, how it's like very smooth, and eventually we just like, now he's one of my main guy, is like one of the guys that I work with the most, because
sick,
he has exactly that vibe that you were describing. And
that's so funny. I thought you were gonna say, now he's a FPV pilot too. You know, I thought you said,
I know, no.
He didn't cross that line.
No.
But it's true. And drones, definitely have this vibe. It's very delicate, you know, when you think about it. So we're approaching the end of the podcast, but I still have like a couple of questions for you. My first one is very important, is do you still have time to fly for yourself?
No. the answer is quite simple. I don't really have time to fly for myself. I haven't flown for fun in probably 2 years or something. Because I mean, if I want to fly for fun, I'm going to fly during work time, like work hours. And even if it's we still having fun and stuff, it's still work in a way, because I see it as training. And we don't really do a lot of just like having fun shooting the shit anymore. and flying like that. But yeah, it kind of stopped also after COVID for me, because it was a long time where we were just not allowed of like to go outside or just do anything. And then after that, work really started, and then I couldn't do that. Also, if I go fly for fun on the weekend, then I never see my family, because I'm doing and it's all I'm doing all the time, you see. Because this is already what I'm doing all the time, and I'm having fun doing it. But if I start doing it when I have free time, then I just do this 100% of the time, and that's not possible. So but now I drive cars for fun. I do different things. Yeah.
Nice. Well, you answer the question I was coming next. It was, do you have fun while you're working? Because, you know, I know some pilots, the stress takes over them during the shoot, because, you know, that's what happens, a bit of anxiety, a bit of stress. So they actually don't really enjoy the flying process on sets, but you seem to be comfortable with that.
Yeah, I definitely enjoy it. This is the most fun for me. Like, this is even more fun than going to a bendo and just... and ripping, I think it's going there, finding, like, understanding the vision, executing, having it being looking really good at the end. That's like, I get super stoked. I hoot and holler most of the time when I shoot. It's I'm actually famous on set for that, for like shouting a lot and being very excited. So yeah.
That's good then, because you're not missing on any fun with FPV. You seem to have.
I mean,
fun,
I still wish, like, I still wish I could go to bendos every now and then, and I still want to do it. That's like the weird part, is that I miss like the adrenaline of like really pushing it and being like, okay, now I kind of want to push it. But yeah, at the same time, if I do that, I'm going to be flying all the time. Like, and this is like, I feel like I need other things in my life than just one thing.
Yeah, no worries. That makes sense. I had grand plans for this episode. I wanted to talk about FPV in France, but I tried to also keep my episode short, and we got like just we got carried away, but it was really interesting in my opinion. So instead of talking about France and FPV, I have a final question for you, which I usually ask to my guests when they come on the podcast for the first time, and it's, what's next for you in a short term, in a long term? Do you have plans you want to share with everybody?
Well, I mean, it's more the same, hopefully. Like, more of the same. We're still looking out. There's still dreams to be achieved in the future. So, yeah, like, hopefully, yeah, we'll get to do more of the same and bigger stuff pretty soon. So, yeah.
Okay, well, that sounds like that.
Oh, and we have a movie coming out this year. Okay. Yeah, we have a movie coming out. Probably in like maybe in a month or two. It's called Drone, and it's about a student girl that starts getting followed by a drone, and she doesn't know why she's being followed, how, or who's piloting. And and it's gonna be like the story of how, like, how she finds out, and I play the drone in the film. So I mean, I did, like, we did all the perspectives on everything, we used 7 different kinds of cameras and drones to achieve one drone capable of everything, from FPV to just flying really far from like doing all kinds of stuff. So yeah.
Wow. And where will we be able to see that, do you think?
So in France, it's definitely going to be in cinemas, and then I think it's going to be available because it's a Disney it's produced by Disney, so it's probably going to be available on Disney Plus or something.
Cool.
And it's going to be available on Canal Plus as well.
Oh yeah.
So yeah.
That's good to know, because Canal Plus, you can have it from overseas as well. You're probably aware of that, so maybe it's worth.
I didn't know, but yeah,
yeah. At least in Australia, I know it's possible. So exciting news! Mm. If I can watch it, I will definitely do it.
I'll let you know when it comes out.
Yeah, thank you. Please do. Well, thanks for coming today on your day off to talk about drones. You never get a cool moment without drones, obviously. if people want to see more of either your personal stuff or your company content, where should they go?
Just check out my Instagram, Benoit Fink, BNOITFINCK. So that's my Insta. And then there's House of FPV, Instagram as well. So, the company's got its own little account. So, yeah.
Okay, cool. I'll have a look myself. So thanks everybody, for listening to this episode. Like I said earlier, if you want to, if you like this podcast, just give us, like a thumbs up or give us some ratings, share it with the people you like. If you think this information can also be useful to people, you know, send it their way. Thanks Benoit again for joining. I hope all your dreams that you talked about come true and that you can come back on the Thank podcast you. Like in some time and we talk about everything we couldn't talk about today.
Sure.
And that's it for this fortnight, people. I wish you a lot of happy flying and we'll see you again in 2 weeks' time. Bye.
Bye-bye.